This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
Hello, in the studio this week we have Dr. Anaïs Moller. Would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, hello. My name is Anaïs. I am a researcher in France and I work with machine learning and supernova cosmology.
Okay, so we'll start off then with the supernova cosmology. What in particular are you working on with that?
Yes, so cosmology, what we're trying to do is to understand what the universe is made of. So what we see around us and the stars and everything we can like observe is only around 5% of the universe. And the rest of the universe is of things that we cannot see, but we can study their effect. So what we do is to try to understand what the universe is made of and a little bit what is going to happen with the universe in the future and what happened with the past. That's what we do in cosmology. Now, with supernova cosmology is that we use particular types of exploding stars to study how the universe is becoming bigger.
So there are multiple different types of supernovae, is that right?
Yes. So supernova are basically stars that explode. Not all stars will explode, but a lot of them will. So there are two main types that we work on. One is called type 1a supernovae, and these are stars that live with another star. There are two stars together. And one star will start eating material from the other till at one point it cannot eat anymore and it will explode. When it explodes always in the same way, with the same brightness almost. And that one we use for cosmology because they can help us to study distances, to measure distances. Now there are other types of exploding stars that are called core collapse supernova. And they're usually very heavy stars that at one point cannot balance their energy budget anymore, their pressure. So they will collapse and explode. But these ones I am less interested on than the first ones, which allow us to measure distances in the universe. And therefore, we can study how the universe is becoming bigger.
Could you explain to us a little bit about how you can use these to determine distances?
So it's really interesting and it's really intuitive. Imagine that you have two light bulbs and the light bulbs are exactly the same. And you have them here in your hands and then you give it to two people and tell them, run away in the night. And I'll close my eyes, and when I open, one will be further away than the other one. And the one that I receive less light, and this really intuitive, is the one that is further away. But this is all true if the light bulbs are exactly the same. So in the universe, the stars, and you have seen it in the night sky, shine differently. They have different temperatures, they have different components. So you cannot use them as the same light bulb. But type 1a supernova, because they explode almost exactly the same, can be used for this measurement. And that's what we do. We search for this supernova. When we find it, we see how faint we see them, and then we can compute the distances.
So now, once you have those distances then, does that help you then map out how the universe expands?
Yes. So imagine that we live not in the three-dimensional universe, but like in a tablecloth, okay? And this is an elastic tablecloth, two dimensions, or in a balloon, which also can be stretched. So the idea of the cosmic expansion is that the tablecloth or that fabric is becoming larger. So if you have two points in that tablecloth that you have drawn with a marker and you stretch it, the points don't do anything, but the distance between them increase. So that's what we do. We try to measure that distance and also the velocity of that expansion because we cannot wait enough to see in thousands of years how much the fabric has moved.
Because this expansion has been going on since the universe began and is expected to go on as long as the universe exists.
Well, that's the challenge. We're trying to measure very well what is producing this expansion to see if it will continue with the same rate in the same way in the future. But what we know is that the universe has been expanding in an accelerated fashion since a while already. And this is what the Nobel Prize winners in 2004 or 5 actually measure. That the universe, we thought that it will be expanding, but each time slower. So it's the disaccelerated expansion, probably called. But what they measure is that it was actually expanding every time faster. And to explain this, we didn't have something to explain it. And with the rules of physics, we postulate that we have this dark energy that is making this universe stretch out. And that's the accelerated cosmic expansion that I'm trying to measure now.
And the reason we can't measure this dark energy directly is, of course, because it's dark. Like dark matter, it's a substance which doesn't emit light, which is obviously how we detect pretty much all astronomical sources which aren't from gravitational waves. So where does machine learning come into this?
Oh, that's very interesting. So we take a lot of images with telescopes around the world to measure these supernovae. But we don't have infinite amount of time in telescopes because there are only a handful of telescopes that can point this to the sky and observe exactly the same thing. So machine learning is a way to actually optimize resources. Basically, we have all these images, this beautiful data, we don't have ways of actually using it completely. So machine learning is a way of actually finding those events. For example, if you have the famous needle in the haystack, how do you find that needle? Machine learning can help you actually finding the shape or finding that particular object that doesn't bend or something like that. And that's the idea of machine learning. But instead of finding a needle, we're finding things in images. Or in this case, we're finding supernova in the images of telescopes.
So when you're looking for a supernova with a telescope, let's say you've got before and just as the supernova is exploding, what are you going to be, what's the difference? What are you going to see?
Imagine that you have a beautiful image of a galaxy a year ago, okay? And now you have a supernova on it. It's just one single star within millions of stars of that galaxy that is exploding. But it's really, really bright. It's so bright that if you make the difference between the new image and the old image, you will see a blob or a circular source. And that's what we are searching for. Things are changing in the sky. Now, once you have that, you already have what we call transients. Things are changing with time. But this can be supernova, but can be other stuff. And machine learning can help you not only to find these transients, but can also help you to identify which type of transient it is.
So part of the problem with supernovae is that if you're looking for them by eye, you can only see them as they happen. You just have to be lucky to an extent to start seeing them happen. Is this something machine learning can help with to help us spot what's going to be a promising supernova?
So by taking images and doing the difference of images, we can find the transients. Now, which type of supernova we have is another question. And this is something I'm working a lot on, and today we have been discussing in the university, is how do we find which are the type 1As against which are the core collapse or the other objects that we have in the sky, which are much more than what we have spoken of. And machine learning can help us because we can get this evolution of the brightness of the explosion with time and see the different ways that that rises and falls or the colors it emits and to identify which type of supernova we have. Now, traditionally, this is done using spectrographs. So spectrographs, what they do is that they take this image of this exploding star and they split the whole rainbow of colors or at least a big portion of it. And that will tell you exactly which supernova type you have. However, this time is really expensive and very hard to get, and you only have a very small window to get that spectrum. So what we do is that we use machine learning and just like the colors we observe in these images that we have, and we classify which type of supernova we have. And this is something we have been really working with machine learning because it's so fast and so powerful, and it's such a beautiful thing to use a new technology into science.
So when these are classified manually, it's a matter of having a look at these spectra, where lights are different strengths based on what the star was made of. Is that right?
Yes. So you get what we call emission and absorption lines. So emission is the elements that are actually really bright and you can see them in a certain wavelength. And absorption is something that has absorbed the light. And you can see that, and that's really precise. For example, type 1A supernova have a feature that is a silicon feature. So you search for it. But when you have only the images that have not that feature, but have only like broad colors, then you're not searching for silicon anymore. You're searching something else, which is link, but it's not exactly the same. And that's where machine learning can help.
When you're working with machine learning, then what are you looking for?
Oh, I think one of the biggest challenges that we have right now in astronomy is that we have so much data and it's so hard to figure out what are interesting objects. So I'm working now with a project that is LSST, which is a Large Synoptic Survey Telescope. And it will be a telescope that will be looking at the southern sky for 10 years. 10 years mapping the southern skies, which is a humongous amount of area, and also possible things are interesting. So when I'm working with machine learning, I'm looking for speed, I'm looking for accuracy, but I'm also looking to try to figure out if what the machine learning is giving me as a possible type 1A is real 1A or not. So a high accuracy, a high purity of my type 1A supernova sample.
You say you're using machine learning as this new technology to do that. How would we have done that before then, finding these promising candidates?
This is a good question. Before, we would have to get the spectra and see all these absorption and emission features. If you don't have the spectra, just looking from the light curves, sometimes it's really hard to disentangle it. So some people, what they have done is that they take, for example, how bright it was at one point and see which colors it shine and say, this is possible at 1A. But these methods are not really, really accurate. And also, when you do cosmology, you want to be sure that what you have. Now, the other problem was that if you do this method it's not by hand, but it's a little bit more involved by the person, it's not fast enough. And we want something really fast because LSST is expected to have 10,000 possible things changing in the sky every 30 seconds. Imagine this not just one night, but every night in a week, and every week in a month, every month in a year for 10 years. So this is a huge quantity of data we need to go through.
Yeah, that's something which you just physically cannot put on scientists anymore. I mean, there's only so many PhD students can get to do that for you, right?
Exactly. And we want the PhD students to do more interesting things than just looking and figuring out what it is. We want that they use this sample and have fun and learn new things about the universe.
Out of curiosity, how fast can your current classifier identify a supernova?
So once the model is trained, we can do 2,000 light curves every second, which light curves is just the evolution of flux against time. So that's a lot of possible supernovas to be classified. Mm. Now, we're working to make it even faster, so it's something interesting to look how far we can push this type of method.
Yeah, that's already sounding very promising, because 2,000 per second compared with a possible 10,000 per 30 seconds?
Yep.
Those are promising numbers. And so hopefully that's something we will be able to handle with technology rather than poor beleaguered PhD students.
Exactly. And it's not only supernova cosmology that is interested in this. People that are doing like radio astronomy that have so much data in their hands can take out these machine learning methods and use it for their own science and find interesting things.
You've talked about how fast it is, but I suppose the next thing then is how accurate is this, the method you're using at finding supernova?
So we need it to be pretty accurate because we want to be sure that our sample is good. So our estimations using simulations can go up to 99% accuracy, which is pretty good. If you put a looser cut, you can go to 95 or something like that. So it's a pretty good accuracy, I think. And it's giving us more confidence to use the supernova classified with machine learning for physics.
So I do a bit of machine learning myself, and one of the big concerns for us are false positives and false negatives. Where a false positive is, for our listeners, when your classifier says an object is there and it isn't, whereas a false negative is when it says an object isn't there and it is. So from your talk, you mentioned that one of these is a bit more important to you than the other, I believe.
Yes. So we care not losing too many supernova, but for us it's more important that the ones we get are true ones. So for us, if we lose a couple of them, it's okay. But we want to be sure that if we find 2,000 type 1a supernova with machine learning, most of them, hopefully all of them, will be type 1a. If we lose a couple hundred, it's okay. We can deal with it.
So essentially, you can afford to lose some as long as the ones you've got are very, very accurate in their classification, yeah.
Yes, and we're also trying to figure out if we do the opposite, actually, to try to allow more events to be in our sample, how much that will change the physics results that we have. And that's what we call a systematic study. It's trying to figure out how bad can it get as well. And this is a really important part of the science we do. Trying to bend the boundaries to see how far the physics that we measure will change.
If I'm getting this right then, by testing how your results change the physics that you get out of them, does that mean that if your classification is throwing up a few wrong answers, but that doesn't change the physics much, that's a good thing?
Exactly. So imagine that you're measuring, I don't know, something falling on Earth, okay? And you have different objects that you're throwing around to measure the gravity pull. and you see a small difference when there is a little bit of wind or something like that, if it doesn't change the reality of the measurement, the core of the measurement, that's a good thing, because then you're robust in your analysis.
So one of the things that you mentioned earlier then was the experiment you were looking at getting this data for, the LSS. I think first it would be a sort of useful thing if you gave a brief overview of what that experiment is.
Yes, of course. So right now we're applying the methods that I'm developing to the dark energy survey, which is an experiment that we already finished taking data, so we cannot do anything in the future. The data is there. But in the next decade, we will have a huge experiment that is the LSST. And this is the one I was telling you that is the 10,000 alerts every 30 seconds of possible things changing in the sky. And this is a massive experiment that will be around the world, and we want to take advantage of all that data. Now, LSST has many things that we can change still. It's not like we're ready to the data, we're preparing for it. So part of the job that we're doing is to figure out the best ways to deal when the data comes in. So one of the projects I'm working on is called a broker. So a broker basically takes all these alerts, possible things that are changing in the sky, and will try to figure out which alerts are interesting for a science. So this can be things like the kilonova, or this can be active galactic nuclei shining their way in the optical spectrum, or this can be supernova, which is my favorite topic, of course. Also, you can have like asteroids and things closer to us. So the broker, we have been proposing a broker in France to actually try to disentangle the interesting things for the things that are not that interesting. And what's pretty exciting is that we have the room to ask really tough questions, like what could be the best approach and what technology do you use? How do you make this technology trustful for the next decade? Because this is an experiment that will last 10 years. So this is a humongous amount of time, so much time that most of us cannot think what we were doing 10 years ago. Imagine that. Thinking about, like, at the end of the experiment, oh, how do we select this object? How did this supernova came into this sample? But it already happened 10 years ago. So this is part of a big project that we have. And we also want that the technology is, like, the state of the art. Like, for example, we are working on the cloud, which is the new thing that people are talking about. How can we host the processing, not in a computer, in my desktop, but using it, like, as a global network?
Yeah, I can imagine it would be really inconvenient to be going through your data and thinking, oh, that would have been excellent to get a little bit more on, and it happened 8 years ago.
Exactly. So we need to learn about this and be prepared. And the universe is like, imagine that you arrive to a new island in the middle of nowhere that nobody else has been there. There may be new animals, new plants and stuff like that we have never heard about. It's the same with the universe. By using LSST, which is now called the Vera Rubin Telescope, actually, to honor a very important scientist, Vera Rubin, this telescope will allow us to see further away than we have ever been able in the southern sky. And this will give us a lot of new things that we haven't seen yet. And we need to be prepared that this can happen. There will be stuff that we don't know.
Okay, that's what you're working on now then. So to finish off then, what brought you to Manchester then?
Oh, so in Manchester, it's a funny story, I think. By meeting people that do different science, but we're using the same methods or asking the same questions, we can build a network and share our knowledge. And during a conference that was earlier this year, I met a researcher from Manchester that invited me to come and chat with you and learn a little bit of what you're doing and share a little bit of what we have learned from what we have done with Supernova.
Because this sort of machine learning application is, as you've said earlier, very, very broadly useful. When it comes to upcoming surveys, we've got some which are going to be producing data at absolutely ridiculous rates, to the extent that we can't rely on previous methods of classification, which for quite a lot of sources was just astronomers going and having a look at them. We do have some citizen science projects, for example, you could look at Galaxy Zoo for the optical galaxies and Radio Galaxy Zoo for, well, guess. but after a point, even they aren't going to be keeping up. So these surveys are absolutely wonderful for data. We're going to be able to learn so much from them, but in order to get anything useful out of them, we need to know what we're looking at.
Yes, and you mentioned citizen science projects, and in Supernova we have been using these for a while. When I was in Australia in my previous job, we used the portal Sooniverse and share a little bit the images of the telescopes with citizen scientists that help us do science with it. But LSST and the Vera Rubin Telescope has a component as well of sharing data around the world and helping other people collaborate and see what we're doing with science.
Oh, is that right? What sort of things can, for example, our listeners get up to help then?
Yeah, so absolutely. There is a webpage called the Sooniverse that has a lot of projects, like you said, the Galaxy Zoo or Radio Galaxy Zoo. But supernova-wise, there is a couple of projects. I cannot recall all of them right now, but I'm sure if you enter into the webpage, you can find somewhere that you can help out. And in most cases, if you find a supernova, you are actually informed which type of supernova it was, and sometimes you're even co-authoring some of the telegrams that we do. Like, we did this for the SkyMapper telescope in Stargazing Live a couple of years ago, and the first people that helped us identify a supernova actually got co-author in one of the astronomer telegrams.
Ooh! So, if you're listening to this and you're really desperate to be on a supernova paper, here's your chance.
Absolutely. I'm pretty sure you can find a lot of interesting stuff in the Sooniverse and see a little bit the real data we work with, because sometimes we see in the journals these beautiful images with colors, perfect resolution, like the perfect image. But most of the time, those images are not the ones that we look every day. And I think it's something super interesting to share. What type of images are we getting our information from? And learn about that.
Okay.
Thank you. It's been wonderful to have you here.
Thank you for having me. It has been wonderful to stay here in Manchester.